Thanks, Dr. Cutts. I appreciate the opportunity to be visiting with you today. Title of my talk today is Mid-South Cotton Yield and Fiber Quality, Genetic and Environmental Contributions. Now, for most of you in the room, you fully understand that variety selection is extremely important. Arguably, it's one of the most important decisions we make when we plan our cotton year out at the beginning of the year. This decision is much more complicated now than it was, I would argue, 30 years ago. 30 years ago, we were looking at yield potential, yield stability, obviously fiber quality, maturity of each of the cultivars, cost of that cultivar, and other minor factors, management, required seeding rates. Today, that decision is much more complicated. I think the most important factor, probably driving selection more than anything at the moment, is herbicide trait. We're seeing an increase in the value of that BT trait in the selection process. They obviously have some differences from resistance to bacterial blight and verticillium wilt, and now nematode resistance. So this decision is difficult. Can cost quite a bit, and we're seeing very rapid variety turnover. So 2 or 3 year lifespan for some varieties is probably par for the course now, and that's a real challenge for agronomists running applied variety testing programs in order to deliver the quantity of data required to make recommendations on cultivar placement. We have to have very large programs. And I think there are some extremely large programs represented in this room. You understand exactly those challenges. With the Tennessee perspective, and this is just our program, I think it would compare to many in the room. We typically run very small plot trials, 2 rows, 30 foot in length. We had 58 entries this year, looking at a big turnover in the next couple of years from a trait standpoint. We also run large plot variety trials, and these are going to be on farm. This gives us... we don't test near as many varieties. We'll look at somewhere between 10 to 15 typically on farm, but that gives us locationally relevant. We can look at a large number of environments, many more environments than we would see with an official variety trial, and then we conduct numerous company evaluations. As a producer, you may or may not understand when you select that variety the role that the environment versus the genotype plays in that ultimate yield and fiber quality observed. Now, we've defined this previously in several different areas. We typically look at GE and G by E interactions on small plot data. We see a lot of analysis on NCVT or RHQ programs, even some breeding programs. And I'm not going to talk much about those analyses. They're in the literature, and I'll reference them at the very end very briefly. For this approach, I was really wanting to target the GE and G by E contributions that a producer would likely see in the commercial germplasm. And so there have been a few publications which have looked at commercially available germplasm to define these parameters. The most recent was Dr. John Snyder in Georgia. He looked at 8 light cultivars, and he's found that approximately 96% of lint yield was determined by environment, about 1.2% was genotype. Lint percentage, and I'm going to come back to this, 38% was in environment, 51 genotype. Micronair was about 64% environment, and then about 9% genotype. From a length standpoint, dominated by environment. And then we do see a genotype play a pretty good role in strength at 27%. Now, I wanted to move back. We'll talk about the Kirby data set. The Snyder data set, Georgia, on-farm variety trials, 8 varieties. Kirby's data set was quite a bit larger. Now, there were 2 different data sets analyzed in this publication. I'm going to focus on the strip trial data, which was a little bit larger, more widespread. They found very similar percentages reported for both environment and genotype. The one exception was this difference in lint percent. So they saw about 82% of the variability and length percent be described by environment. The difference between these two publications, I believe, all of the data from Georgia was processed by the Georgia MicroGym. Now, the Kirby data set was analyzed, from what I understand, on was ginned on several different types of gins. So that environmental parameter actually captures gin type as well. And so that's why I think we see a pretty big swing in those two numbers. Otherwise, we see very, very similar contributions across the board. Environment really dominates what we see at the end of the year from a lint yield, lint percent, micronair, length, strength, and uniformity standpoint. But we don't have a lot of data from the Mid-South, and we don't have a lot of data from recent cultivars, particularly the longer staple, lower micronair cultivars that we've recently seen introduced. So our objective with this paper was to quantify the effect of genotype and environment on cotton lint yield, lint percent, and fiber quality parameters, define the shifts in contributions of G and E to lint yield, lint percent, and fiber quality caused by the introduction of a longer UHML lower mic cultivar, and then ultimately characterize that G by E interaction for those parameters of interest. So we're fortunate to have many of the collaborators in the room today. From Alabama, Trey Cutts helped me compile this data now with YAR. Tyler Sandlin also played a large role. Bill Robertson with Arkansas. Dan Frommey with Louisiana. Darren Dodds from Mississippi. Andrea Jones, this data set was compiled prior to her leaving Missouri. And then Ryan Blair and myself in Tennessee. And in total, we had about 105 locations. And you can see we have several locations in the Delta, the West Hills, in Tennessee, Mississippi, and on into to Alabama. Now, what we're typically looking at when we're running one of these on-farm trials, these are going to be 6 to 12 rows wide. Somewhere between 200 to 1,600 foot in length, we're probably going to average about 800 to 1,000 feet. We plant these with producer equipment. We harvest these with producer equipment. And then we pull seed cotton samples from every treatment within every location. At that point, they're either going to be ginned on a microgin, the Missouri microgin, the Tennessee microgin for data within Mississippi, Tennessee, and Missouri, or a tabletop gin for Louisiana and Alabama, as well as Arkansas. We typically class these at a USDA classing office, although Texas Tech and Louisiana State were used for some of these analyses. And the real reason we do this, we're trying to provide cultivar performance across a large number of environments. And this delivers locationally relevant information on commercially available germplasm that we would not be able to have otherwise. We absolutely cannot conduct this number of official variety trials throughout each one of these states. So this is an overview of the data that we analyzed for this analysis. We did have six states included: Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, and Tennessee. Some of these locations had within-field replicates. Typically, within-field replicate, we would just duplicate those. We just have two entries replicated only twice through the field. From a gen type, I've got those listed, our classing offices that we used. In total, it was 102 locations that we were able to compile from the 2015 and 2016 years. What I wanted to do was find like cultivars across those site years. So we were able to find from the 2015 and 2016 seasons 85 locations with three common cultivars, and we were able to find 69 locations with four common cultivars, and that fourth common cultivar is that longer staple lower micronair cultivar. So I want to spend a little time looking at this data so you can understand the variability we captured. Lint yield from this data set ranged from under 750 pounds, about 600 pounds, all the way up to over 1,700 pounds. From a length standpoint, all the way from about 28.5 to a little over 32 millimeters. Micronair, normally distributed from about 375 to 55 uniformity from 81 to 87. So we were able to capture quite a bit of variability in this entire data set looking at the 85 site year locations. One thing I do want to point out when we look at lint percent, so that difference in tabletop versus microgen, we can actually see in this data set. I'm not aware of a publication that's previously highlighted this difference, and we're going to try to generate that information in the coming year. But the lower peak you see here is actually going to be microgen data. We typically see that microgen data fall close to our commercial gens. This upper peak, when I graphed it by gen type, you can really see the upper peak is going to represent what we see from a tabletop gen. A little bit trashier typically, since we're not cleaning that seed cotton prior to the gen and not cleaning the lint after the gen stand. So that's the separation in lint percent. And it's important when we interpret this data that we understand the role of ginning type in this analysis. Strength was normally distributed, ranged from 290 to just over 340. So we ran a standard mean separation on this data set. We looked at both the 85 site year data set containing those three common cultivars and the 69 site year data set containing the four common cultivars. You can see with this many locations, we had a very strong statistical power. We were able to separate these cultivars quite nicely. I do want to point out from a length and microNair standpoint, you can clearly see the significant role of phytogen 444. This is a much lower mic, not only a significant, but I would argue a substantially lower mic than what we see from 1522, 312, and 4946. Similarly, we can see a large increase in length associated with that phytogen 444 variety compared to the other tested germplasm. Now, I want to start by looking at the G by E we calculated for the 85 environment, three cultivar data set, and then I'm going to look at the 69 location. So I'm basically moving from that large data set down to that four cultivar yield environment data set. So we know we still have the power we need to run the analysis that we want to conduct. Very similar to what we saw from the Snyder data set, environment dominates most factors. Lint yield, in particular, 87% of what we see from a lint yield standpoint would be described by environment. We do see a break from the Snyder data set in that lint percent is dominated by environment, again, likely due to that variability in gen type captured with that environment term. From a microNair standpoint, 70% is driven by environment. For length, 70% is going to be driven by environment. From a strength standpoint, we have about 23%, so a little bit lower than what Snyder saw, but 23% driven by genotype. Now, if we look at, we drop some site years, right? So we're trying to get down to that four cultivar data set. If we drop some site years, we see very little shifts in the role of E and G in determining each one of these parameters. We're typically looking at a 2% or less shift with lint yield, lint percent, microNair length, strength, and uniformity. So with this analysis, we felt good at using, we felt we could use this data set to test that fourth cultivar, introduction of that longer staple, lower mic cultivar. So this analysis, I'll tell you, we got a lot of numbers on this screen. I'm going to focus in on the top two sections here. What we basically did, the first line is going to include all four varieties. We've got 1522, 312, phytogen 444, and Stonebowl 4946 across 69 yield environments. And then this bottom one is going to include everything but that longer staple, lower mic cultivar. The rest of those listed are just another combination of those three of the four tested cultivars. We wanted to make sure that we were able to capture all that in the manuscript. I'm going to focus today on just two. The first one being that four variety data set and the second being the three variety data set across those similar 69 yield environments. And this is the real important part. We see very little shifts in the role of environment and genotype in determining lint yield, minor shifts from a lint percent standpoint, as well as from a strength standpoint. We do see substantial increases in the role of genotype in determining observed micronair when we introduce that phytogen 444 to variety, 26% approximately. And we also see a 38% increase in the role of genotype in determining length. And this is really the key component here of this analysis. All of a sudden now, that variety selection decision is making a tremendous impact on our realized micronair and length at the end of the season. Now, we also ran a G by E analysis. We did not consider within sight replication, so we can't capture that G by E term like you typically would. So instead, we ran an environmental index analysis. And so what we're looking at here is for differences not in intercept, but differences in slope. The differences in intercept would be captured in that initial initial mean separation table. So what we see from a lint yield standpoint, you might predict if you only select cultivars that are planted, entered and planted across as wide of a region as the Mid-South, you might expect they would respond similarly to environment. They're quite adaptable. We saw no separation in the slopes for any of the tested cultivars from a lint yield standpoint. Now, the fiber length, you can clearly see separation from a intercept standpoint, phytogen 444 quite a bit longer than the other tested varieties, but you don't see, and we did not find, a significant difference in slope. So they all responded similarly across those environments. Same thing from a lint percent standpoint and a strength standpoint. We did not see a significant separation in slopes. We did see separation in intercepts with a micronair, phytogen 444, falling quite a bit lower than the other tested cultivars, but no statistical separation from a slope standpoint. We did, however, see statistical significance of the slope term for uniformity. And that was the one exception in this G by E analysis. Otherwise, that G by E term was not significant. And that slope analysis was actually captured in that document as well. We saw no significant separation between those slopes until we got to the uniformity parameter, and that was the only exception to that analysis. So I want to briefly discuss these results in relationship to some of the previously defined roles of G and E. In our three cultivar data set, which excludes that UHML, that longer UHML lower mite cultivar, 70% of micronair and 70% of length were determined really by environment. And this very closely matches the data of Snyder and Kirby in their percentages of that on-farm, their on-farm analyses. We saw 87% due to turnout. These results are similar to Kirby. They ran several different gen types as we did, but they do contrast the results of Snyder, and I believe that is because they just ran that same Georgia microgen. When we look at that, the four cultivar data set, which includes that longer UHML lower mite cultivar, we see only 48% of micronair and 39% of length determined by environment. These greatly contrast what we saw by Snyder and Kirby. We have seen similar length percentages reported by Meredith, Campbell and Jones, and Campbell et al., but I think the important part here is to understand we are looking exclusively at commercial germplasm, not at the regional high quality or breeder lines, which would be very genetically diverse compared and may not have the same yield potential as what the data sets that the cultivars that we're evaluating here. These results do contrast the micronair percentages which have previously been reported by Meredith, Campbell, and Jones, and Campbell et al. So to kind of wrap this up, we believe the introductions of a longer UHML lower mite cultivar in the Mid-South will cause a substantial increase in the role of cultivar in determining both micronair and length. And although significant, that lint yield response was dominated by environment. And so I think the important part to this analysis would be we're going to have to start looking more closely at fiber quality. It's definitely not going to be factor number one. It's still probably going to be fourth or fifth. But varieties like Phytogen 444 or something like Delta Pine 1646 are really going to start to change the way we select varieties from a producer standpoint. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you during the symposium. I think we have a little time for questions.
Yeah, we've got about 10 minutes or so for questions, so I encourage discussion in the symposium. So are there any questions for Dr. Raper?
Dr. Eagle here.
Yeah, Tyson, I've got actually a couple of different questions. One, for lint analysis, bowl samples or grab samples?
So these, to my knowledge, every one of these trials that's conducted is going to be pulled from either a module, a round module, or they're going to be pulled out of the back of a picker. We're not looking at a 25 bowl sample, and I think that I think that's important, especially on speaking on this data set. Now, I can't speak to the previous publications.
Next question deals with, you know, you mentioned at the very beginning that, you know, most of your variety selection now is based on herbicide traits, BT traits, resistance to bacterial blight, nematode. All of those characteristics are carried by seed. And one of the things, I guess my question becomes, is that it seems to be, now I'm not a breeder, I'm a soil fertility guy like you, but most of the things being developed today, from my perspective, are not, they're not competitive based on yield. They're based on competitiveness by causing problems in other things. In other words, how do I put that? I'm trying to be tactful here. Certain varieties carry characteristics that if you don't use that particular seed type, then the technology associated with it causes problems in other varieties. I'm going to go to soybeans. In my soybean trials, I am forced to use specific varieties to keep from damage of technology based on other varieties. Do you see this as a, how do you see this coming along? You know, I've been around this almost 40 years, and it's really different today compared to what it was 40 years ago. So how do you see that? And then associated with that, in the variety trials, do the particular people handling those trials grow with the characteristics or with the, in other words, if you're growing Roundup Ready cotton versus BT cotton, do you use a Roundup on the Roundup Ready and no Roundup on the others? Is everything treated the same?
So I'll start with that second question.
From
a, yeah, it is. And I can repeat that one, Dr. Ebel here. So the question would be, you know, from a management standpoint, how do we handle these trials? We're pretty fortunate that most of these growers agree to manage the trial uniformly, and we have the ability, we can manage weeds and insects across these trials with the same chemistries. We every year have discussion on whether or not we should break these technologies apart, and we've been fairly fortunate. All of these analyses were conducted, managed the same, right? So all these trials were managed the same across. The other question, are there negative impacts of maybe having all the these cultivars linked to these technology traits? I don't think so. My answer to that would be, I think our the companies that we're working with right now are doing a phenomenal job introducing competitive varieties in these trait platforms almost immediately. And now, sure, there may be a couple of hiccups here and there, exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, when we see a new cultivar introduced in a new tech trait platform, it is extremely competitive. And I think that's definitely a response to a function of how good our breeders are at incorporating that high-yielding germplasm very, very quickly. And we see that if we start looking at older traits and compare that to what were the modern traits, newer cultivars, it's apples and oranges. And you've seen that as well, I'm sure, in watching yield trends over time. I think that's a function of yield potential and yield stability that our breeders have delivered to the industry. So I hope that Dr. Evil answers that question.
Thank you.
I've got a question. Have you looked at the cost or the premium versus discount associated with this variety? So is the 4.4 premium actually more profit based on the premiums associated with this? I mean,
We did not. So we would have had a sliding scale across those years from a fiber quality premium standpoint. Phytogen 444 during this analysis yielded significantly better than anything else tested, and we had better fiber quality. So, I mean, I know the answer to that question. There are other varieties that were tested that may have performed better than Phytogen 444. We just looked at the four light cultivars during that analysis. But to answer your question, did we look at the price per pound delivered? We did not. Not in this analysis. Dr. Borland. Dr. Borland, I think the difference, I think the Snyder and Kirby data sets are looking at, as is mine, is looking at varieties that are very similar in length and micronair. And so environment is going to dominate realized length and micronair at the end of the year if all of those fall very similarly. Now, when we introduce a variety that's very different, I think that increases the role of genotype, and so that's, I guess that's where we see a real break in how do you define G and E. If you look at all available germplasm, these numbers are not going to be accurate. If you look at widely planted, then I think these are spot on. I'm very excited to see that introduction of a longer staple, lower micronair cultivar, where we're going to hopefully hit premiums more consistently and not have to deal with some of the higher mic issues. But yeah, I believe that's why we're seeing the separation. I think that's the reason we're seeing divergence of the two ways to define these parameters. And that's why I'm going to kind of lean on this type of a data set when I visit with a grower on what are the roles of G and E, and how is the decision that I'm making today going to impact what I have at the end of the year. Did that help, Dr. Dr. Albers? Dr. Albers, I think there's probably someone more capable answering that question in the room than I. I don't believe the way that we're defining micronair as a fineness and maturity. I think these fibers are mature. I think they're more fine. That's I am stretching way beyond my agronomist training for comments like that in a group of breeders. Yes, we have some concerns, Dr. Albers, but I've been very pleased, and I think several other agronomists in the room will have the same comments. We've been able to mature out those two varieties very well at along the northern edge of the cotton belt, even under some very challenging conditions. I also think, differences in maturity may not be as large as we think at times. I'm not sure how much separation there is between a few of the tested varieties. We may be talking days or day compared to weeks. So there's my stab at a breeder question, Dr. Albers. Any other questions? Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Let's thank Dr. Raper.